Hey, how are you? It's me, Kamga. And as usual, I always start my episodes with a public service announcement because I feel like this is the best way to grab your attention, you know, immediately before starting the episode. And I need to let you know that between the previous episode and this episode, I actually felt sick. I had the flu. It was terrible. I was shivering like a chicken. And that was not only that, but I actually recorded this very specific episode and then lost it because my wife got into the room and I got distracted. I thought I'd click save, but I actually clicked cancel. So I lost like 30 minutes of me being really in the zone and sharing a lot about my creativity. So I am going to try to fix that now. And as usual, I want to start by thanking people who've asked me questions of any kind on social media, including you who's listening to this right now, because a lot of my episodes, as you know, are influenced by your requests, your questions and stuff. So this particular episode is really very much a product of Banye's questions. Banye is my classmate. We went to high school together, and I reached out to her and asked, hey, do you have any questions you want to find out about? Do you have something you need me to explain or something? And the big question that she asked was, how did you find yourself in the arts class? So this will make sense during the episode. And Banye, I want to thank you for asking that question. You're not the only one who actually asked that question. I've written about it in other ways, but the way you asked the question really got me to realize how important it was for me to tell my story. And I'll tie in the flu as well as missing the episode and even my wife in the whole story. So thanks, Banye, and thank you to you for taking the time to listen. I feel like there's so much distraction in the world right now. If you're going to take, you know, 1 second to listen to me, then that's really a lot. So thank you. Let's get into the episode. You're listening to episode 4 of The Loving Creative, and I'm your host, Kamga. On this episode, I want to talk to you about creativity, not, you know, like the big idea behind creativity, but my journey as a creative. Like I told you in the introduction, I actually lost the episode. So to be completely honest with you, I feel a little bit bad that there are things that I might forget that I'd said in the other one, or things that I might bring up now that I hadn't said in the other one. But we're going to figure it out together. I'm not feeling too well, so that's why maybe I'm running out of breath sometimes. Or maybe I just don't exercise well enough. Either way, let's get on. So recently, which actually ties well with the episode, I've been going through a period where I feel like I've lost my identity as a human. Like I literally thought a couple of days ago that I had no idea why I was doing what I was doing. And I feel like this particular episode is very personal to me because I'm going to be walking through my identity, like the part of my identity that is covered by the term creativity. Like, why do I call myself a creative? What are the things that make me feel like I'm actually creative? And how has the story been for me since I was born? I don't remember much of my childhood. Like, there are some things that happened that I feel like I shut off or I just ignored. But one thing that stands out for me, one particular story that I've had, and it's not like somebody told me this story. I have this memory of a time when there were two particular books. One was A Samurai and a Dragon. It was this called books. And then the other one was a soldier, like a half-legged soldier and a princess, a ballerina, I think. And in one story, in the dragon story, I feel like the samurai was heading out to kill the dragon, you know, like these mythical stories where the dragon has been probably hurting the city and then the samurai goes on a quest to kill the dragon. And then in the ballerina story, there was a fire. And this one-legged soldier had to save this ballerina, like your typical patriarchal stories, I guess. And I don't know why that particular memory stuck with me, but that's where a lot of my love for stories started, like colored books and reading these stories about adventure and love stories. So I feel like a lot of my interest in adventure, fight for your dreams, you know, hold on to your creativity and hold on to your dreams is a lot. I think I can link it to the samurai and the dragon. And, you know, we always talk about slaying the dragon. Even people talk about like resistance in Stephen Prefield's book. He talks about a dragon that you have to slay over and over again, which is like a representation of your big dreams and the world and destruction and all these things that you need to constantly keep preparing for and fighting against, or, you know, basically just going after your dreams. And the ballerina and the soldier represent for me like the whole idea of love story and somebody coming to save you, either from yourself or you saving somebody from themselves. And, you know, the whole idea of empathy and love and growth and fighting for people, basically. So as a kid, I've written about this thing. I don't even know how true it is, because now it just looks like, it just sounds like a myth. Like, adults in my life could not tell me a bunch of things. Like, I needed answers to stories, but many adults just, I guess I was annoying. I feel like I was probably an annoying kid who asked all these weird, stupid questions. And then I discovered a lot of the questions that I asked, most people did not really have the answer. So I ended up reading a lot of books. But my love for books really started in secondary school. And Bagnier, you probably remember a lot about when we were in school. And it was Bagnier, it was Modest. There was a bunch of other people who read books in like loops. So this person would read and be like, hey, so while you're reading your book, somebody else will come and tell you, hey, can I read this book after you? You're like, yeah, sure. And then another person will come and tell you, can I read this book after you? You're like, yeah, sure, but you have to read it after this other person. So you have this long list of people who are reading books after the other person, after the other person. And that's how you eventually had the book, and you had like a limited amount of time to spend with the book. So you had to finish reading the book. So that's how I ended up reading things like Vampire Lestat. And like, my whole vampire history was in secondary school because of Anne Rice. And I'm sure Banyu remember this period a lot. I never read any James Patterson. I really love Harry Potter books. I think I read every single Harry Potter book when it came out, except the last one, which is the only one that I didn't read. And in school, I didn't know that I liked writing. Like, when I was, let me say for one, when I was like 10, 11, there was no very clear interest in like books and writing and stuff. I was just an all-around average student in everything, basically. And what happened around form three was I started discovering things like Shakespeare and all these things, the great people of our time, like books that I had no idea first of all existed in the first one. And the library was open, and then we had two teachers. One came after the other. So there was Mr. Mangong Emmanuel, I think it's of late now, and then Mr. Chia Eugene. So Mr. Chia eventually had a big influence sometime when I was older, but I'll come back to your story later on. But around from three, from four, discovering Julius Caesar, discovering African Writer series, I guess, you know, No Longer at Ease, and a couple of other books that I've totally forgotten, but books that I read and was like, wow, people, words do this thing to me. Like, I like these stories and I like this thing, whatever this thing is. But I never really considered the whole writing career, because in fact, I actually considered being a doctor, because I had an uncle who was a doctor, who still is a doctor gynecologist. And to me, that was like the optimal career path that I could take. You know, basically this is where I should be heading for life. But around form four, in Cameroon educational system, in form five, so there are two exams that you have to take. So there's the ordinary level, because we're based on the British system of education. So there's a GCE ordinary level, so government certificate of education ordinary level. And that's form five. So when you have a bunch of 15, 16-year-olds who are taking this exam, and you have like 11 subjects that you do. So I did biology, chemistry, physics, math, literature. I didn't do additional math. So it was like, you either do literature or additional math. So you're either more science-oriented or more arts-oriented. There were 11 subjects, a bunch of them. Very necessary, in my opinion. But when I finished the ordinary level, which is in the class where I discovered more of my love for literature because of Mr. Chia Eugene, who was a literature teacher, and I loved the way he taught, the way he expressed himself, the way he carried himself. He would say he had jest. Like, he was the kind of person who carried himself with so much confidence and so much, like, almost a glory and honor in the way he just carried himself. And he spoke beautifully. He had written a book as well, Unto Death Do Us Part. And in Form 5, there was this mild rivalry between myself and the classmate, Christian Zakum. And it was either his first in literature, first or second, or Banyes. Like, we had this circle of people who just really enjoyed being the best in that particular subject. I mean, there were people who literally failed everything else and passed just the subject they care about. And I was one of those people, I think. Or was I? No, I don't think so. I was okay. Like, I'm not even trying to downplay it. I was intelligent. I still am intelligent. And the educational system in Cameroon is not exactly built for people who need extra help, which is something that I would discover a few, like literally a year after I left from five. So we're at the ordinary level, I pass in 11 subjects and I have all these good grades, 6 A's, 5 B's. And then my parents are like, all right, well, you're clearly a smart kid. And we think that as a smart kid, you do well in the sciences because you can be a medical doctor, you can be an engineer, whatever, because it's not like you're having difficulties in school. So we meet a counselor who looks at my grades, we have conversation, and he also thinks that it's actually a pretty good idea because from my results, I seem to be an all-round student in really good things. But to be completely honest with you, I knew that I wanted to do history, literature, and French. Like, I just knew. There was no like message anywhere. It's just like, I enjoyed words. By the time I was 15, I was already 15, 16. I knew that this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to play with words. I want to write words. I want to read words. But I didn't have the courage to actually tell this to my parents. which is, of course, I didn't. And I eventually started paying the price for that the year after that, because then I moved to lower SIT. And then the next exam that I write is the advanced level, which is in upper SIT. In lower SIT, then I meet my wife, which is going to be interesting, the story, because eventually she actually helps me figure out a bunch of things. So I meet my wife because I'm in the science class and she's in the science class. So one of the things about my story that is like almost linked to, you never know where things lead, is people always make mistakes. You choose a path, you choose a direction in life, and then you start regretting the direction. You feel like maybe if I'd made a different decision, things would have been better. But when I'm looking at my story, when I look at it, you know, in hindsight is 2020. When I look at it now, it's like, if I didn't go to the science class, if I didn't go against my own gut feeling of wanting to study history, literature, and French, I might never have met my wife. And I don't even know how to think about that. It's actually pretty scary that I might never have met the only person who eventually helped me figure out so much about life and even helped me move to the US. Somebody who showed me so much love and affection and consideration and support. Like, it's almost as if the price I had to pay for not go following my dreams of being directly related to words from a young age is that I found my wife. So lower SIT and upper SIT were actually difficult years, but as they were happening, I did not know they were difficult. It's only in hindsight I looked at it and I'm like, man, I actually barely made it out of school. Even when I wrote the advanced level, one of the teachers who really inspired me to actually do better at the advanced level, no matter how difficult it was Miss Dora Banboye, my biology teacher. And she taught me, in fact, she taught my class from form one to upper SIT. Like, she literally had us every single year for 7 years I was spending in high school. And she's the person who gave me hope in class. Like, every other subject, math, I've sucked at math, sucked at physics, sucked at chemistry. I was just barely managing. But biology was a subject where I was like, you know what? This is my turf. I might have a difficult time with everything else. I might not be able to handle calculations and calculus and all that algebra stuff. But this is my turf. Whether it's the ear, respiratory system, genetics. There's this textbook called Biological Science. I finished the book, I think, twice. And I when I got into the exam hall to write biology, I knew I was going to get an A grade, and I got an A grade. Like, when I finished school, which I guess is something that eventually made people think that I might actually be good at science, which is, I don't know if it was true or not, but I like education. And when I like something, I tend to do well in it. It doesn't mean that I might have an aptitude for it. So, and the reverse is also that if I don't like something, I tend to be terrible at it, which is why I don't like cooking. But I can cook. It just means that if I have a choice, I won't. So when I leave now upper SIT with my science degree, my science diploma, I get to the university. And at that point, I think I was just free-floating. Like, when I was in school, people were like, what are you doing in science class? I was like, hey, I don't know. I guess I'm smart. Because remember my classmates from 1 to 5 who saw the progression that I was heading towards in literature and the words and everything, they were surprised to find me in science class, which is where I found my wife anyway. And when we finished upper SIT now and moved to the university, I wrote medical concours and I failed all of them, which had to deal a terrible blow on my own sense of self-esteem and self-worth. Like, from the time I left from 5, a lot of my self-confidence started depreciating. Like, I lost myself, I think. Like, I didn't know anymore what I was good at. All I had was my brain. Like, I've had 2 major surgeries since I was a kid. Actually, 3. I didn't think I was particularly good looking. I wasn't funny. In fact, I was actually one of the most boring people in my class. I wasn't athletic in any way. Even now, I'm not athletic that way. Even when I was playing basketball, I had difficulties with my eyes because I wear glasses. So I was myopic and asthmatic. Like, the only thing that worked for me for a long time was my brain. So when I got to lower SIT and had to struggle so much to go to school, it started a downward spiral where I literally felt like I wasn't good at anything. And it's only now that I can look back and see that period of my life. In the while it was happening, I was looking for every means to distract myself, whether it was music or friendship or, I mean, I wasn't taking drugs. I wasn't dating anybody. I couldn't even date anybody. I literally sucked at life. And school was my refuge, but school failed me. So for the next couple of years after I got to university, I just left. So when I wrote medical exams and failed, I moved to biochemistry because that's what everybody does. And then after a year of not going to school, I just one day stayed at home and never gone there. My dad had to travel and come and get me because I just stopped picking my calls. And he was like, what is going on? So then my mom hears about this medical laboratory science thing, and she's like, well, you could write a concours, and you never know. I write a concours, like, it's an entrance exam, national exam, and I get in, and I feel in a moment, I can remember the way I jumped in my bed and actually broke one of the rungs, because I was like, oh yes, a second opportunity to make a first impression. I didn't know that was actually going to be my another stepping stone, because for the next 4 years, the first year was actually okay, but the next 4 years, when we, after the first year, which was okay, we go to the practical part of the school, and I discovered, actually, I like talking to the people, but I don't like, you know, taking blood samples. I don't like doing the labs. I don't like any of the things that have to do with the science of the medical laboratory science thing. And 3 years of me failing and me struggling in school, my classmates moving forward, and me managing to be in this new town. And during that period, so in El Paso, my wife actually left the country. So she left and came to the moved to the US. And we're talking on the phone, and she was basically my only friend. I've always had difficulties making friends, generally speaking. Like, I have trust issues, but she was the only person who was able to see how hard things were for me and how difficult it was for me to actually handle school and life and things in general. And she walked me through this process of really coming to terms with what I really wanted and trying to tell my parents. But that didn't work out well. So I had to drop out medical laboratory science. And one day, I just told my parents, like, you know what? I don't think this is working out for me. It was after my parents were actually thinking that I was just being an unruly teenager who didn't know what he wanted to do. I was getting sucked on the phone and talking to my girlfriend every single time. And they were like, yeah, no, you're just going to cut off. You know, the whole, you're going to seize your phone, you're grounded. And 2011, that's when I discovered James Altucher. That's literally one of those key, you know, those milestone moments in your life where you're like, yeah, I met this person, I had this conversation, and things changed. That's what happened for me in 2011. The only difference is that it wasn't a conversation, it was an article about choosing yourself. And a lot of things started changing in my life when I started choosing myself as per James Altucher's advice. Like, a lot of things started moving in a direction where I felt like I sort of started getting back control, self-worth, self-esteem, and all those, you know, self things, where I'd given people so much decision in my life to choose what I was going to study, where I was going to study, how I was even going to dress, what to do with my life. And at the end of that period, that's 2011, that's fourth year, that repeated the year in medical laboratory, I told my parents, I don't want to do this anymore. They're like, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And if you have any typical African parents, you know that that's like the worst thing you can do to your parents. And as a firstborn child with three siblings, and my parents are not exactly wealthy people. Like, they've struggled to send us, not struggle, but they've sacrificed a lot to send us to school and worked really hard to send us to expensive boarding schools and pay for almost everything that we needed. And my dad was very disappointed. My mom literally cried. It was a very hard period, but in that hardship, I felt a sense of calm. Like, I could feel that I knew where I was headed, which was a good thing, I think. So reading James Altucher, I decided now to do journalism and mass communication, which had made no sense to anybody, including me. I was like, why would I even think about this? But then I made a decision. I applied for the degree. I remember calling a friend, Hamlet. I was like, Hamlet, hey man, what are the things that you need to do, you know, journalism in UB? Because he had done a double major in journalism and women and gender studies. And I was like, actually, you just need your points. And I had good points. I had 12 points at the advanced level. I was like, okay, cool. So I applied. And my dad was like, okay, what if this doesn't work out? What are you going to do? I was like, no, it's going to work out. Like, I literally, when you apply to the University of Bohia, because that's actually where I studied everything, biochemistry, medical laboratory science, even journalism, the same school, the same GC result. When you apply, you have three choices of what you're going to study. So usually you put a first choice, which is what you really want, a second choice, which is what you want, but you don't really want that much. And the third choice, which is like, okay, if you don't take me for this two, take me for this one. So what I did was, my first choice and last choice were journalism and mass communication. And the middle choice was sociology and anthropology. So I was literally in the place where I was choosing what I wanted to study based on how much I was interested in it and how it tied with my own personal interests. I think that's the same thing I just said in two different ways. But anyway, my dad was like, what if you don't get into GMC? I was like, no, I'm going to get into GMC. He looked at me. I was like, what makes you so sure? I just know. Like, there was a different sense of confidence and calm getting into journalism that I never had gotten to the other things. And that cut out 3 years, because I went to journalism. That's when I met some amazing people in the University of Bohia. I think I met with Nara Lawrence, Churchill Mambe, Clifford, Quincy Quincy Quende, like a lot of the tech, my involvement with technology and writing and blogging started in 2012. That's when I started GMC. That's when I started writing online. Like literally when I got into GMC, I started writing on the internet because I felt more confident about my interest in words and my interest in technology and all these other things. So there's this link between that, and school was actually fun for me because I was studying things that actually made sense, whether it was news writing or, you know, theories and of mass communication, and having this interesting dynamic of there are more girls in class than boys. So I was restarting, but few people actually knew I was restarting for the third time because I didn't carry myself as though I knew anything. Like I literally came with a sense of wonder, like I like this subject, I want to study it. And I discovered a lot about my own kind of intelligence while being in journalism because it was I could feel comfortable with concepts that were theories and feel more interested in discussing those concepts and understand them easily because they made sense to me somewhat. It's the way somebody looks at a math problem and a person understands what is needed. That's how I felt about theories and news writing and all these other topics. One of my favorite classes in GMC was actually around the fourth year with can I forget the name of one of my lecturers. He was a veteran TV producer, and I worked with the CRTV for a long time, and he hated questions in his class, which was very weird, I thought. But he loved sharing what he knew, and he had these projects that allowed us to look into TV production. It was a lot of theory, and there was a lot of, each year had a really beautiful thing. Like first year, we had to sell journalism, we had to sell newspapers. Second year, I believe we had to do a lot of radio work under the final years, and the final year we had to do to supervise the final years, the second year. So it was, each year had something different about it, and it was dynamic, and it was a social life. And for a period, I was actually president of the association, and I think I'm the only person who actually dropped out of the period of that, like the only person who stepped down of the presidency of the Association of State Journalists. And that is a whole other story that I'll probably talk about one day again, about being erased in history. But by the time I was finishing journalism in 2015, I felt like I had an idea of what I wanted to do, but something else happened, which is something that is like a theme in my life where when I feel like I'm getting a grasp of things, external factors come in. So on the day of my graduation, my dad is like, you know what I think? I mean, I talk to my dad about blogging and staying home and writing for like a year or two or anything, but it's almost similar to what happened when I was in Form 5. Like my parents were looking out for me in their own way and thought that it would be better for me to actually get a job. And I hated that particular decision. I hated it, but instead of choosing myself and doing what I wanted to do, I still took the advice, which is something that is weird. We always blame people for making us do things. It's like somebody says something and you hold on to it and you get angry. How dare you insult me that my head is big? Instead of just being like, you know what? I hear you, but I'm not going to listen to what you have to say. And that's what I should have done, honestly. I should have told my dad that, okay, I have my degree now and I feel like I know what I want to do, and I don't think this is a good idea and I'm going to do this other thing and let's see how it works out. But I was angry with him, angry at myself, and I still followed his advice. So I moved to Douala, stayed with my aunt for a while, And there, I eventually got an internship in Canada International for a month around 2015, 2016, yeah. And it's at that internship that I discovered the Unmistakable Creative, the podcast with Srini Rao. And for a whole month during that period, I literally lived, like L-I-V-E-D. My soul was sustained by the conversations in the Unmistakable Creative because I felt as though my soul was leaving my body. I was drained. I wasn't doing anything creative enough. I tried to propose programs and it didn't work out because it just so happened that during that particular period, the person who was in charge of graphics had an accident and couldn't come to work. So a lot of things that could not be, new things could not be done. And I was doing both English and French news. Like I was exhausted taking the cab every morning and heading back every night. And I would just walk from Canada office to Rond-Point Express before taking my taxi back to Lokpom. And it was hard for me. By the end of the month, after I listened to Unmistakable Creative, I felt this really nagging sense of I'm not supposed to be here. I just got up one day, took my bags and left. I didn't tell anybody, not my parents, not my auntie. I mean, during the period, I was telling them, like, I don't feel comfortable with this thing. I don't like this thing. And they're like, no, just hold on. It's Cameroon. You know, it's a big media house. You're going to figure it out. You're going to be fine. But I just couldn't. I just, you know when there's this feeling of I'm not supposed to be here. And I guess it's something that cannot really be defined because sometimes it's just us being procrastinatory and not wanting to take the courage to do what is important. But I could feel in my whole body that I wasn't supposed to be in this place. So I left. I didn't know where I was going to go. I didn't have a house. I didn't have any money, nothing. I went back. I had a different girlfriend at the time. So I lived with her for a couple of days and we eventually broke up because I was really in a bad place that whole period. I moved with my brother. He was angry with me and eventually kicked me out. No, not really kicked me out. I chose to leave. Like, you know what? I can't stay here because I don't think I can handle. And my parents told me, you know, you should go back to Douala and get this thing done. Like, go and apologize and get this thing done. And I said, no. They're like, all right, fine. Well, you figure things out. They're like, cool. And then I fell sick. Like, it was a series of unfortunate events during that period, that 2016 period, where it was just bad and terrible for me. I was sick. I was homeless and penniless, jobless, schoolless, literally everything less. And at that period, now, one day my mom called. She's like, yeah, what is going on? You know, talk to me. I'm your mother. I cannot keep watching you doing all these things and not understand what's going on. What's going on? I talked to my mom about how I felt about it all and how it was important for me to do something that I really cared about and how what I was doing didn't work for me and how I was uncomfortable in Douala and how all these other things. And she asked, okay, what's your plan? I'm like, you know what? I want to go back to school. And I want to be back in Boya. I feel like I'm supposed to be in Boya and do a bunch of things here. Like I could keep writing and going to school and just sort things out. Like she's like, all right, fine. I'm going to send you money. You get a place and then you figure out school. Man, I think I cried that day because I was like, yeah, mom, thank you so much. So she sends me the money. I get a house in Boya in Dirty South. And then I applied to a master's in English language. Actually, I applied to a master's in English literature. Like I was going towards, you know, going back to my roots of my love for words and everything. But guess what? Although I was taken for the program in English literature, the program didn't exist in the University of Boya, which is something that sucks about the educational system in Cameroon. Eventually, a bunch of us, I think there were four of us, it was Elodie, it was me, it was Commander Jemje, and another friend from Chad. We eventually had to switch to English language, which was a whole process on its own. Every single day we eventually became friends and then switched. So that was 2016, started a master's in English language and also kept writing. Like I've been writing since 2012, writing on a lot of, not even a lot, I got on my blog. So Kamga has a blog. I think I started a podcast at the time. I don't remember. But anyway, during that period, started going to school, master's English language, learning about linguistics, learning about accents. But the program was just so exhausting. I was like, why do I have to go to school every single day from 7 a.m.? Like, what is this? This is not supposed to be undergraduate. It's supposed to be a master's program. What the hell? And as if the universe was listening to my plan, that's when the physical manifestation of the Anglophone crisis began in Cameroon during that period. So it started slowly, you know, the manifestations with the lawyers and then the teachers and everything, and the school strikes and all this violence. And before long, yeah, things had been different. Things had changed. It wasn't the same thing anymore. So during that period, something happened. I think when I was going to school and I was thinking about dropping out of the master's program, something happened that had to do my writing, which was I was tagging an article by a mentor of mine, Alexander Quest. And in that article, he spoke about a bunch of things, talked to a bunch of other people, talking about the importance of things. And he was in the UK at the time, planning to get back to, I didn't even know that he was planning to get back to Cameroon. But we talked, and when I read that post, went through the private messages, started talking with him, and we had this wonderful exchange. It was an amazing connection with somebody who could see the kind of future that I was looking for, like the kind of future that do with words and language and culture and all these things. And eventually he came to Cameroon and said, hey, let's meet up. We met. That was around December 2017. That's a year after I was sort of still doing a master's program. I didn't even know at the time. And I think it came in November. And then December, we're having this conversation. I was like, why don't we have a spoken word poetry thing in Boya? And Alex was like, well, this is the space. Make it happen. I'm thinking about laughing now because that's the way Alex has always been. Like, it's literally, you have an idea. It's like, all right, cool. Make it happen. And that's the way it was for me at EA. That's how my journey at EA started. Writing in 2012, getting in contact with Alex because he was watching what I was doing on the internet. He finally comes to Cameroon. We meet. I have an idea. He supports me with a platform, helps me. That's the first time I use Eventbrite page. And then before we realize it, we had a week to set up the first EA Griot night. I reach out to Leslie, like, Leslie, you need to perform. I reach out to Glory. I reach out to a bunch of people. And we have this amazing night where words and sounds and people connect in a way that I felt rejuvenated. Like I knew that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. A couple of months later, I figured out a way to get employed at EA. And I started working at EA from 2017. And I feel like I grew at EA. Like I discovered that I could do poetry at EA. I met people like Mr. Harry Kale, who is a great grandfather friend of mine. Met with Alex, spent so much time with these people and learned about creativity and art and building an experience and food and wine tasting, and met amazing people, had these great workshops, learned so much about even social media and writing and all these things. Like a lot of my of what I do even now as a poet, as a writer, as a creative, there are links with how I had to improvise or learn new things about myself in EA. Like if I never actually did work at, if I never worked at EA, I would never have done that. I could actually do spoken word poetry. Like I knew I could write poetry. I was fun with words and everything, but actual performance, and especially the part where I could literally just come out with a line and then do something and, you know, carry a crowd, host an event, those are things that I learned how to do at EA that I didn't know I could do from the very beginning. And after I left EA, which is when I think my wife actually came back, she returned from the US at that period, sometime around 2017, which is when we got engaged in May, and then she went back around end of May, June, yeah. Then we applied for my visa in June, which took a year. So during that year period, I worked at EA. I got fired at EA. And then another grandfather reached out. Like, he was like, what are you doing? You seem jobless. Well, that's not what he said. But William Tucker, also another mentor, great designer, and somebody who I feel has really shaped the landscape of Boya in terms of art, and not just Boya, but even Cameroon designing and stuff. He reached out, told me that there was openings at places, asked me to send my application, which I did, and started working at AJ Partners for a while. But then I was already half foot in, half foot out. Like 2017, from June 2017 to when I moved to the US in June 2018, there was so much uncertainty. Like, would they give us a visa? Should I do this thing, like my life depended on it? Should I move to Douala completely? Like because I moved now from Boya to Douala, and then we're doing events, and like it was so much confusion and fast paced, because as soon as the embassy said, hey, by the way, you have an interview, man, things started moving fast. Money had to get out. We had to move around. I was trying in the same period to actually say goodbye to my friends, because at the time too, we started the Mito Mito poetry group with Leslie Howard and Hamlet and Glory. And we had the honor to perform at the ambassador to Israel's house, in Yaoundé, thanks to Esther. My creative life has had weird shapes and shifts and ups and downs. And especially there have been people who have really come into my life and changed the direction. Whether it's Alex, who showed me how, like, what was possible when you chose to work in the sense of making art for art's sake and produce an experience. Or Harry, who showed me how to become an expert in a domain and cut across, like whether it's using the camera, using words, or teaching people. Whether it's actually William Tucker, who showed me how to hold somebody up, like literally how to be a mentor. Like, there's an opportunity here, Petit Frere, come up and let me help you get this opportunity for you, not for me. I feel like you deserve to be earning money for your skills. That's one message that William Tucker got to me. And even my own parents, like my mom reaching out and giving me money when I was down and not wanting to do anything, that's like one event that I will never forget in my life, because it showed me the kind of person that she was. And my dad being my friend and talking to me during periods when I was just difficult or trying hard to do things, or when things started being bad in Boya, and he always like, hey, are you okay? You should be careful and things like that. So my whole journey as a creative has not been straightforward. Like even now, for example, I have a part-time position with my Quiet Cave, which is a non-profit organization that deals with faith and mental health care. They're trying to connect churches and people and organizations that deal with mental health care. And I feel like there's so much more about creativity and art that people either misunderstand or ignore or don't take into consideration when they look at the big scope of things. I feel, for example, that it's possible to make money with creativity, but then you have to be able to create, like Srini Rao says, for an audience of one, which is almost literally yourself. And then you have to be willing to take the scenic route. Like, there's no path like, all right, you go to school, study literature, do an MFA, write a book, get a publisher. Like, man, there is no single direction to being this thing. And it's what I'm discovering every single day, even being here in the US and making this podcast and writing a lot of other things. Like, there's no one path. I mean, just as a shameless plug, I made an audio collection of my poems and some writing that I'd done, and like what, few people bought it. And in the beginning, I was like, man, how are people not buying this? People have been telling me that they wanted to support me. I wanted to do things, you know, to help me out. Like, why am I not getting more people buying? And if I have to get stuck in that particular position of feeling like my work is going in vain, then I never get to do anything. You know, like, if you're going to be creative on your own terms. Sometimes creativity will not bring you money, but it will bring you the kind of joy and love and experience that actually allows you to do your job, whatever it is, very well, in a way that you actually get promoted or find more opportunities or connect to more people. Like, there are different ways to be creative. There are different ways to have a creative life. For me, I know that I want to spend a lot of my life using words and writing stories and doing all these things. But I'm also now getting more aware of the fact that as a husband, as a partner, and as somebody who lives in the US, where you have, I mean, it's like everywhere, you have bills to pay. Creativity and words might not be how I make a living. Let me repeat that. Like, it might not be the way that I actually make my money now. It doesn't stop me from building an audience. It doesn't stop me from creating a Patreon page. It doesn't stop me from doing a podcast. It doesn't stop me from trying to create an environment that allows me or makes me the space to make this. And also, creativity takes money. Like, I'm using a microphone right now, using a computer right now. You're listening to this on the internet. I had to upload and we had to pay for the internet. I had to eat to get the energy to make this thing. Like, bills have to be paid. And creativity is part of life, I feel. This podcast is made to create, made to love, made to thrive. I feel like that's who we are. We are made to make things. We are made to excel in our existence as human beings. And it's true that sometimes things don't seem that way. But that's not all the time. So, if there's one takeaway that you could take from this episode, and this is actually the end of the episode, I feel like I've been talking a lot about things, and it's do your part to own yourself, to choose yourself, to create for the sake of creation. And by doing that, you find ways and find people who will support you on your journey by being your authentic creative self, by tapping in into that part of you that says, you know what, I think I like this way this word sounds. Whether it's dancing, whether it's drawing, whether it's painting, making music, you know, there are different ways you can be creative. Even while building a business by its definition is a creative solution to a problem. I feel like everybody is born creative. We only unlearn it as we grow older or as our parents or society shut us down. And in my own story, I've been able to come out of that shell of I should be doing this thing because you give me money, and I find myself now gearing back towards what I really want to do, which is making and creating stories. So this is my story about creativity, and I'm sure I've missed a bunch of things or I've put things that I didn't want to put, but I hope you find it in your heart to create for the sake of creating, because you deserve better. You never know what is going to lead. By writing online, I got access to meet people. By sharing my story, I was able to actually get jobs directly from my ability to show my skills. So if you sit there and you feel like you can write, get online and write. If you feel you have a good voice or you have a story to tell, get on there and make a podcast. If you feel that, I mean, if you have a smartphone, if you're listening to this right now, you have the capacity to be more creative than you think. Get out your phone, make something. You never know how it's going to help or how that is actually going to come back to you, whether it's in terms of joy, happiness, or even money. So don't give up on your creative dreams. We are made to create, made to love, and made to thrive. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this. I feel honored that you will sit down and then, you know, share this moment with me. You take care.